so excited to welcome you to Real Woman, Real Torah, a project of Bacheva Learning Center. We're here to offer you an authentic Torah learning experience, produced for woman, by woman. I hope you enjoy. Okay, so let's move now into some specific mitzvahs connected to Pesach, being that Pesach's coming up soon. So maybe you can, you know, you mentioned earlier that there are exceptions to this rule of mitzvahs, women being exempt from mitzvahs atish as one grama. So let's just talk about some of the mitzvahs connected to Pesach. Which of those are women exempt from? Which of them are they not, and why?
Great. Okay, so there's this whole category of mitzvot that were instituted rabbinically. And those mitzvot, you know, three separate ones, they are each brought, there's a quote by Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi about each of them in three different places in the Gemara saying that women are obligated in these time-bound mitzvot. One of them is Hanukkah candle lighting, one is the mitzvot of the Megillah and the Purim mitzvot, and the other one is the Arba Koso, the four cups of wine on Pesach. And for all of them, the reason given by, I believe it was Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, is Afhein Hayu Batu Anes, which is typically translated as they too were there included in the miracle. And it seems that that is indeed the most straightforward understanding of why women are obligated in those mitzvot. And there's a sense of like, these are mitzvot that are designed, that they were, A, were rabbinically instituted, and B, were designed for us as the Jewish people to express our gratitude to God for the fact that we are here to serve him, and that that's a tremendous miracle, and that we're very grateful for that salvation. And interestingly, in Tosfot, one of the Baalei Tosfot is quoted as, today the names are a little bit fuzzy for me, but the notion of a potential translation of Afhein Hayu Batu Anes being that women were actually the instigators of the miracle. And if we think about Yehudit in the Hanukkah story and Esther in the Purim story and all of the righteous women, all of the women, they were just in the
I believe Pesach, it's the Rashbam, no?
Sorry. Yes, thank you. The women in the Pesach story, where basically when Paro had decreed to kill all the male babies, and the women were like, okay, that's it, we're done, we're not having kids right now, or I think the husbands were saying, that's it, we're not having kids right now, and the women said, according to the Midrash, said to their husbands, you know, Paro only decreed on the male babies, but you, by choosing not to have children, are decreeing on the female babies also, and like, let's continue to have children as an act of faith, and that, so that, you know, that act of women's basically faith, and also the midwife Shifra and Pua, who basically saves Moshe, you know, which very directly led to our salvation. So basically, the Rashbam says that it is that Afhein Hayu Batu Anes means that the women were the ones who instigated the miracle, and that's why women have to be celebrating these as well. Tosfot continues to reject that, saying that really, both because the words Afhein Hayu Batu Anes means they too were in the miracle, and to choose words that mean they too, when you want to say that it's actually the women were the instigators, it's not, you know, there are other vocabulary words to be able to express that. And also in the Yerushalmi, the formulation there of the same is Afhein Hayu Batu Safek, like they too were in the same doubt, like in the same question of like the whether they were going to live or not was the same existential question that they were dealing with as well. But either way, these are rabbinic mitzvot. They were instituted in as much as we might have this rule that women are exempt from time-bound mitzvot. When these mitzvot were instituted, they were instituted for women as well. So in terms of what the one piece of that that's Pesach connected is the four cups of wine, because that's a rabbinic mitzvah connected to Pesach. And indeed, women are chayav in that. There are other parts of Pesach that are mitzvot aseh shel zman grama, that are positive time and mitzvot, that women are indeed obligated in. To the best of my knowledge, women are obligated in the whole Pesach package. The matzah, which is a major one, women are obligated in that because there's this notion that when there is a lo taseh, a prohibition, that's basically the other side of the coin of the aseh, of the positive commandment, that they basically are two sides of the same coin and come together as a package. So since women are obligated in the biblical prohibition of not eating chametz, it's taught, brought down in the Gemara, that it was kol sheyeshno be'bal tochal chametz, whoever is included in the prohibition to eating chametz, yeshno b'kula chol matzah, is included in the obligation to get up and, you know, not necessarily literally get up, but to be eating the matzah. So women are chayev in eating matzah at the Seder, for motzi matzah, for korich, for tzafun, for lafikomen. The rest of the time, it's basically the same as it is for men in terms of the matzah situation. Magid, being part of the Haggadah story, is also very much part of the Pesach experience and commandments. The notion of the Higadah Tzila Bincha, transmitting our tradition about how important the mitzvah, basically how important our redemption from Egypt was. This notion that God, I mean, the way the Ramban puts it, that God did all these blatant miracles for Bnei Yisrael to save us, to redeem us from Mitzrayim, and to be able to give us the Torah and to bring us to the lands of Israel where we could practice all those mitzvot. That's something that was like a very unique experience, that God did all of those blatant mitzvot. And in as much as today we might have people who don't have a hard time believing in God, because there is no visual, tactile, you know, expression of God's constant supervision over us. We always have these remembrances of Yitziat Mitzrayim. It's most tangible on Pesach. It's the most, that's when we have it very, very clearly. But every time we make Kiddush, it's Zechel Yitziat Mitzrayim. Every day we're supposed to remember Yitziat Mitzrayim. So it's really very, very central to our tradition. Like the fact that today we still are so aware that we are here serving God in this world, that's very rooted in the fact that we had this time of really God choosing to expose himself through miracles to us in ways that we have not been privy to in that type of like supernatural sense since. So the notion of transmitting that to the next generation and to those around us is really, really critical. And whether people have biological children or not, the notion of Magid and sharing in the Pesach story is something that is considered really important. And within the codification in the Shulchan Aruch, and I believe also in the Mishnah Berurah, there's a discussion of specifically making sure that people are saying that telling over the narrative of the Pesach story in a language that's in the vernacular, in a language that people can understand. And if they don't speak Hebrew, to make sure that people are telling it over in a language that everyone can understand, including the women, including the children, because the women's involvement in that transmission of our Masorah on the Seder night and in general is just really, really important, and certainly something women need to be part of. There's an interesting question about women's chiyuv in terms of haseva, in terms of the reclining, and people recline while they drink the four cups of wine, when they eat the matzah. And the Gemara questions whether women should be, or has a statement regarding whether women should be reclining or not. And they say back there in, you know, the 500s, I don't remember exactly which century the Amora who said it was in, but it's in the Gemara, that women, the initial statement is that women don't recline in the presence of, I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact words, but women don't recline in the presence of their husbands. But if it's an isha chashuva, if it's a prominent woman, an important woman, so then she would be reclining as well. So first of all, just to unpack this reclining thing for a second, the way we recline today is this like very clumsy, awkward, like one elbow on the table. You know, I guess different communities have different customs in terms of their matzah and their matzah crumbs, but I know for us, like the, you know, my Haggadah is full of grape juice stains and matzah crumbs, like from the time, like from when I was a child, I still use the same matzah the same Haggadah that my grandparents gave me, of blessed memory, I think when I was like 9 years old. And like those stains are all there because it is the most awkward position to be, like leaning, with my elbow on the table, turning my chair, and then like basically dribbling my grape juice or getting my matzah crumbs all over the place. And it's funny that's what we're doing to exhibit our sense of freedom, because I think for many people it really feels like a contortionist type of position that does not make a person feel particularly free. And it's just the thinking of like, oh, I'm doing this because we are free, that really, like, you know, gives it its significance. Historically, the reclining totally was an indication of freedom. They used to sit in the Greek type of living room setup, the tricycline, where there were these three couches shapes like the Hebrew letter chet, like, you know, three sides of a square. And people would sit there reclining. I think there's like artwork, not necessarily of Jews, but from that time period where people are really like leaning on their sides and eating like while lying on the couch. I know my kids don't like the rule, but they're not allowed to eat on the couch because it's so comfy. So just like sit there on the couch, like lie there on the couch and eat. So the notion of reclining is something that kind of lost its chayrut, like its freedom, physiological expression the minute we were eating around the table and not reclining on something that's like a couch. So just bringing that back to the, so, I mean, the Gemara is saying that it seemed, and this kind of brings us full circle back to the Avud Zarham, it seems that there historically there were women who didn't feel comfortable really reclining and feeling a real sense of freedom around their husbands. There may have been historically more of a sense of like a type of subservience. But even back then, it was very clear that if the woman was prominent, if she was an important woman, and she, you know, then she would be reclining as well. So when this is codified in the Shulchan Aruch, it's codified basically just like that women do not need to be reclining, or that women don't recline, but that if they are prominent women, says the Mechaber, you know, Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, that they too would recline. And the Rama, the Ashkenazi Posek, adds in, he says, V'nashim shalana, like basically says that like our women today and all of our Ashkenazi lands are all considered important women. So fundamentally, that would translate into women reclining. But he says that the custom was that there were women who were not reclining, and that the reason they were not reclining was that they were relying upon the Pesach of the Ravya. The Ravya had said that in our days, or in his days, whatever it was, that nobody should be reclining, because once you're sitting around the table, it really feels very not comfortable and awkward to be like sticking your elbow on the table and slanting your body as you try to not spill grape juice all over the place or wine. And that's not really an expression of freedom. So it's an interesting, today I think different communities do different things. I think most of the women that I've asked in my classes, most of them do have the practice of reclining. It does not seem, I have never seen anything in any sources that there's anything inappropriate about women reclining. It's really just more that it's a physiological expression of the sense of chayrut, of the sense of being able to be relaxed and free. And it seems that historically women sometimes, you know, not in an inappropriate way, because it's clear already from the times of the Gemara that the prominent women were reclining as well, just like in a way that a person feels like they could just feel relaxed. So the women who are not doing Haseva today, it's not because they're not considered prominent. It's not because they are feeling subservient to you know, their husbands or any other men in the room. If they're not reclining, it seems that the Rama thinks that the historical reason for that is that the women, as opposed to the men, were so mechan the Ravya that it just felt anachronistic. Like it just didn't feel like it felt right given the structure of their tables to be reclining. But fundamentally, women today would be reclining as well, unless they are of that custom that they don't for those reasons.
Nice. Interesting. Very cool. Okay. Any closing thoughts or anything else you want to share about specifically mitzvahs connected to Pesach, or just in general, this topic of, you know, women's connection to their Judaism, you know, as it's connected to them being exempt from certain mitzvahs?
I think, like, when I think about it, you know, certain women at certain points in their life might not actually be able to sit there for the whole Seder and be fully part of that experience. And I think that, A, it's important for women to know that they are technically chayav in the mitzvah of matzah, you know, in saying whatever they need to be saying from the Haggadah, et cetera. To be drinking the four cups. So even if a woman is at a point in life that she is putting her children to sleep and their whole family is at a hotel and they're not at the family Seder, so they should just like bring some of that matzah with them back to their hotel room so they could actually fulfill their mitzvot. And I think there's something really, you know, there's something so powerful about being part of a Seder and being able to hear everybody's different perspectives. And there's also, you know, if a woman finds herself that this year or any year that that's not her Pesach experience, whether it's for a family related reason or for some other reason, whatever it may be. There's also meaning, I think, in those types of Pesach experiences where a person can really reflect for themselves on the meaning of that matzah. The matzah is both a message, a symbol of our avdut and of our chirut. It was both the bread that, the matzah, the food that the Jews ate while they were in Egypt as slaves. It filled them more for longer. And it was also an indication of their freedom, of their rapid, rapid leaving when there was no time for anything to rise. They did not have rapid rise yeast and sourdough. For anyone who bakes it knows that it takes a while. So for that starter for the mother, to do its thing. And they just didn't have time. They just left so, so quickly. And I think that's something that every year is so personally relevant, hopefully for everyone in different ways. The questions of taking that time to contemplate, what are my own personal mitzarim, the word mitzarim, mitzrayim, my narrow straits, where are my personal areas that I'm looking for geula this year? And whether a person is at a table with 30 people, I think they could be thinking about that. And whether they're, by themselves, I think they could be thinking about that, because this is a time of redemption. And I think that for each person to really tap in and think about what are the things that are holding them back from really shining God's light through their unique prism as best they can. What can they be doing? How can they be freeing themselves to really be their best selves and to free themselves from whatever shackles are holding them back from doing that? I think that always, as I said in the beginning, and I'll just say it again, the notion of serving God through doing mitzvot, I think, is really meaningful. And women are really chayav, as I said at the beginning, chayav in more mitzvot asei shazman grama than they're exempt from, if you count the rabbinic ones as well. And really, to make sure that women are doing the things that they're chayav in, unless obviously they're exempt for a specific reason, and B, irrespective of that very narrow category, in the scheme of things, it's a pretty narrow category in terms of our all of the mitzvot, and in terms of a more holistic sense of serving God. There really is no place that there's no grounds for apathy here, and that notion of striving, I think, is really important. And and as much as this is a discussion very much about the actual mitzvot, a metaphor that I sometimes think of is like a chocolate chips and a chocolate chip cookie. While there are certainly people who are very, very happy eating chocolate chips straight out of the package, I think that for most people, having chocolate chips baked into a really great chocolate chip cookie just feels better and more enjoyable for many. And I think that sometimes we think of mitzvot as chocolate chips. I think for most people, eating chocolate chip cookies, if the chocolate chips weren't there, they wouldn't be particularly excited about that. It is about the chocolate chips, but it's not just about the chocolate chips. It's also about the cookie that's holding it all together. And I think that men and women, but we are here speaking about women's p'tor here. I think that sometimes people can get very caught up on those chocolate chips, on the specific mitzvot. But we don't want I think we're not aspiring for a checklist Judaism where we have our mitzvot, we check them off, and everything else is just not connected to our service of God. And as long as we're checking off the mitzvot, we feel okay, we're doing okay here. I'm not comfortable with that model, because I really feel every breath we take, every step, everything we're doing here, we're here, it's such a blessing. Every moment is a blessing. We're here to serve God as best we can. And all of our lifestyle choices come down to that question of those are the ingredients of what's holding those chocolate chips into the cookie. What is holding our cookie together? And I think that that place of us, being mindful about our chocolate chips, we want our chocolate chips to be, good in quality and quantity, but we also want to make sure that our cookie ingredients are the ones that we want to be using. And that comes down to all those other things we were talking about in terms of the tamei mitzvot. That comes down to how we're interacting with our spouses, if we have a spouse, how we're interacting with our children, if we have children. Are we working on ourselves when we wake up in the morning? We are faced with so many challenges that test our bein adam l'chaveru skills every day. Are we working hard on those things? Are we striving to be our best selves, not just in terms of the specific mitzvot that we're doing, but in terms of the cookie that's holding it all together? And as women who do have exemptions from certain things, whether it's specifically because they're mitzvot asei shazman grama or not, that notion of just keeping our finger on the pulse of our well-being, which is very, very intrinsically connected with our service of God, and making sure that we are that we're on it. And as I said before, on it doesn't necessarily mean burning the candle at every end. On it can sometimes mean having the courage to say no to the person who just asked us to do another chesed, or having the courage to climb into bed and actually get adequate sleep so that the next morning we're not snapping at all the people in our house, you know, and only being able to muster that kind of smile and nice words for the people who we encounter at work. You know, it's a very holistic, it's a holistic thing, this Avodat Hashem thing. And I bless us all that Pesach should be a time of real redemption for us on as individuals and for us collectively as a nation, a time of us to be able to really feel a sense of achdut and acceptance, both of all the parts of ourselves and all the parts of our people, and for us to be able to really take every opportunity to make mindful choices about how we are serving God, and what it is that we're doing, whether it's the chocolate chip ingredients or all the other ingredients of our cookies, to be living a holistic life where we are, God willing, blessed with revealed good, the strength, the health, and the happiness to really shine God's light into this world through the unique person that each of us is.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Adi.
It's my pleasure, Hadassah.
Kasher and Freilich and Pesach, as we say.